the NBA is set to return in about a month, right? Like a month tomorrow, I guess it is.
And training camp's at the 10th, isn't it?
Yeah, the 10th.
Or 9th, 11th, whatever.
Yeah, it's whatever such a moving target for every league. It's difficult to really lock down every single date. But the Raptors are already down in Florida, right? They're in Fort Myers. And Nick Nurse said he's comfortable. It's been all good. Fred VanVleet said it's weird and different, but he's willing to put faith in the team and the league. And hopefully we get there. And to chat about it, we're joined now by Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm well. How are y'all?
Yeah, we're doing okay. We're doing okay. I mean, it's getting closer to basketball happening, and I'm hopeful it'll get there. I'm not convinced it will based on COVID and the cases in Florida, but the schedule is out, so that was normal. And we know the Raptors are going to have a tough run with their remaining eight games. And MJ and I were talking about this earlier. Like, they've got a buffer between themselves and Boston. They're not going to catch Milwaukee, but they got a buffer, but it's a tough sked, and it's imperative that they hold on to that two seed. How confident are you that they'll find a way to do that?
I'm pretty confident, and you know, it's funny, I was talking to some Raptors folks much last week, and I think one of the things they have going for them is, to the extent that this restart is going to take time for teams to regel, when you have a high IQ team, I think basketball becomes more intuitive, and to the extent that you have to relearn stuff, or just kind of the first few games just go by instinct. I think when you have guys like Lowry and Gasol sort of mining the back line defensively, being the traffic cop there, and obviously Kyle on the offensive end, but I think you're somewhat of an advantage. I agree with you. You want to hold on to that two seed, just the way that conference is structured. But I'm fairly confident. There's no way to kind of know. I mean, it is fascinating to talk yourself in and out of, well, which teams are helped most by the break, or which teams are helped least. Who can recapture that magic? I mean, the Raptors, in many respects, were having this magical season. I don't think many of us had them to be a strong number two ahead of all the rest of the pack except Milwaukee. I mean, I was looking at their record and just marveling at what they accomplished this season, given they lost Kawhi Leonard. And so you hope that they can just pick up back right where they left off. The crazy thing is we are in the middle of a season, and yet the break is longer than any offseason.
So then what is your, if I'm going to ask you today, who do you think gets helped the most by this big rest? Maybe the Raptors might be hurt because they were rolling along nicely. Who do you think gets helped the most by having this big break?
I mean, I'm inclined to say the Clippers for this reason, among sort of, you know, say the top six or seven teams combined. Just because Paul George was really still coming back into 100%. And I think when you have a player of that caliber who probably just needed a little more time, came back in November, I think if all things being equal, probably would have come back maybe a little later, but wanted to get in the rhythm of playing with Kawhi and that the new nucleus of that team. You know, you also have to believe LeBron has helped. One of the things we've seen is when this guy has rest, he's pretty indomitable even at this age. But I also like Toronto, you know, because look, Gasol and Lowry are older players. You know, they've been nicked up a little bit. You know, I worry for Milwaukee, which is such a rhythm team. They were kind of talk about a team with a magical season. They were one of those teams where just they could probably run good sets blindfolded. They just had this. You know, is that a sort of an ineffable quality that takes a little while to reemerge? You know, it's more of a rhythm brand of basketball. But this is just, I mean, look, I'm performing guesswork like anybody else. Like, there's no precedent to this. I mean, who knows who's helped? Yeah. Who knows who got really good workouts in and which guys were kind of playing video games, or not because they're lazy, but because maybe they don't have a court like Mike Conley in their basement. You know, like, you know, it's so hard to know which guys sort of got what they needed out of the break and which will take longer to reintegrate an offense into their mindset or defense or the schemes or the plays. You know, Kyle's a guy who I just know, like, hey, he's going to get back out there and nobody knows the league's playbook better than him.
Well, and he's going to take a charge, COVID or otherwise. I mean, Kyle's going to go out there and battle, right? Like, I look at those guys, a guy like Lowry, who I think will show up and you won't even notice that he missed anything because of his competitive nature, the way that he plays the game. You mentioned LeBron. We're chatting with Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN. We did a pressure list a couple of weeks ago, and we both had LeBron at the top of it just because of who he is, what happened last year with L.A., the role that they were on this year, his age, Would you agree with that? Of all the guys in the NBA coming back into this bubble, is LeBron the one with the target on his back in terms of pressure and a guy that's got to find a way to make this work over everyone else?
I mean, yeah, and I think you kind of hit on it just because I think expectations for him are always higher than anybody else's. You know, if Kawhi doesn't win this year, he's playing with house money. He won last year. Giannis is still young. I mean, we can go through the top 10 players and you can come up with a rationale that either the guy is on the come or maybe the guy was a little hurt or whatever. With LeBron, you know, the bar has been set. He missed the finals for the first time last year in a decade. Anything less than a championship, you know, apart from maybe a couple of years when everyone knew the Warriors were better, and you know, his move to Los Angeles sort of reset the bar, which is you don't go play for the Lakers and then not win. I mean, the whole point is you sort of glom onto the legacy, you add your talent to it, given the quality of the market and the allure and everything else. Like, yeah, and you go out and extort Anthony Davis or the Pelicans for Anthony Davis, right? Like, so yeah, to your point, I think if you're kind of putting, you know, setting the expectations bar, nobody's is higher than LeBron's, and that's been the case for a decade.
Ken, what are your expectations for the Denver Nuggets? You're having a really good year. Jamal Murray's more, you know, Canadian, excellent player, strong three seed there in the West, but seem to be kind of lost in the Los Angeles conversation. Are they at all a threat to perhaps get to a conference final and unseat the Clippers or the Lakers?
Yeah, they're sort of the mystery guest at the table. And it's interesting, you know, we've all heard about that Jokic, well, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, contracting COVID is one thing, but he is slimmer and trimmer. And now there's this debate going on. It's sort of the old David Wells in baseball debate. Like, do you want that guy to get in shape? Actually, isn't he best as sort of a gummy, blobby, sort of other sized creature who sort of just eats space and somehow gets it done and all the rest of it? You know, so, you know, that's going to be a mystery. I mean, I like that team. I like them defensively more. I don't think we think of them as a stalwart defensive team. And I think there's an assumption that Jokic's a little slow, but actually, it kind of works. They're pretty disciplined. You know, I'm not entirely sure they're a team yet that makes each other better. I still want to see more. But there's just a lot of, I mean, that team runs like 9 or 10 deep. You know, you get to a point, you know, the Raptors were like this for a few years. It was like, they just have a lot of really good basketball players. You know, it's just like you can go 9 and 10 deep and not feel like, oh, that guy's coming in. Can we tread water until the starter returns? And I think, you know, Denver has historically, in the last couple of years, they've been that. And I think they've honed it even better in this season.
Yeah, they do have that kind of feeling of the Raptors, DeMar, Kyle, Casey. Although I would suggest maybe Jokic is a step above those two guys in terms of what he can do and what he's brought this past season. But I look at the team right behind them in the standings kind of as almost team COVID. Like Utah got this whole party started with Rudy Gobert.
Zero.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell, the uncertainty of where their relationship stands. Like, I love Utah as a team. I think they're a step below the LA teams, but not by much, and they could catch a heater and go on a great run. I just don't know what to expect in terms of that locker room and the history over the past 4 months. Where do you stand on Utah?
Yeah, I'm actually less concerned about the chemistry and more concerned about, and I know he's not a big name, but Bogdanovich being out really hurts them. I mean, I think the story of the Jazz has been they're a really resourceful team since Hayward left, right? But they didn't have a lot of spacing. You know, they played when Favors was there. It was like a traditional four, traditional five, not a lot of shooting on the floor because Ricky Rubio was the point guard. But you know what? We're going to manufacture possessions. We're going to just run a lot of misdirection, and we'll grind it out and get enough good possessions, and our defense is great, right? Then they get this guy who's this really big 3-4 guy. Bogdanovich is hitting 40-41% of his three-pointers. He's enormous. And it just sort of, you know, when you combine that with Mitchell, his dynamism, and look, when you have stretchy players, all of a sudden a guy like Mitchell can get to the hoop because now Derek Favors isn't hanging out on the left block. Bogdanovich is one of these unheralded guys who really, I thought, elevated them as an offensive team. I thought they had their best offense in a while this season. And without that guy, you know, now you're back to, hey, we have a bunch of, you know, Joe Ingles can do some stuff. He's a pick-and-roll player. And, you know, Gobert can dive, and he's a better offensive threat than people realize. And, you know, maybe Mike Conley can kind of rediscover his touch. I mean, that guy's always been a wonderfully poised offensive player who had kind of a lousy start and was a little banged up. But it's going to take that. I just think that that, to me, worries me more than, hey, is everybody going to forgive Rudy? But to me, like, I need the guy with a 41% three-point shot who's 6'8". Like, that worries me more.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, hopefully we get there and we see how it all plays out. We look forward to it. It's always great catching up with you. Thank you for taking the time, Kevin. We'll do it again down the road.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There's Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN.